I have very much looked forward to being able to take these communion services as communion services. As I said before, so often on Sundays we have a big list of things to do. And so I want to just continue speaking about communion. Just make a few points. And last time I got Sam to be the scholar and to remember the four things that Jesus did that he told us to do. Have you remembered in the last 2 weeks? Okay, in a big voice, please, could you tell us, number one, what did he do with the bread? Take. Thank. Break. Give. Thank you. So last time we were in Luke's gospel, and I simply pointed out that Jesus did things, that communion involved physical actions, engaging with bread, which is something that comes from the earth and involves a lot of work, a lot of involvement of people. And he took that to convey what he was about to do, and how through this ritual he could be received in a physical way. So today I just want to talk about one or two words. One of the things, let's say, we live in very confusing times. And one of the areas of confusion that I see at work around the world is language. Communication is difficult. Words mean different things to different people. They have a history. And that's one level. And then we are an international church, and it becomes all the more so. I get to have little communication breakdowns every now and then, which I'm aware happens, and I think, oh, what's happened? I thought I said this, and I heard that, and it's just a bit of confusion. So that's happening all the time. Can anyone else relate to that as an international person? Okay. You think you know what a word means. You think you know how it's going to be understood. And oops, there's a surprise. Well, our faith, there are lots of words that are used in this church that mean very much different things to different people. And on the one hand, while it's not my job to sort that out, on the other hand, I think it's good to be aware of that. So let's look at what we have in front of us here, this arrangement. Let me ask, is it a table or is it an altar? Which word lodges in your mind? Now, there's not a right and wrong answer to this, but it's a difference. Who relates to this as an altar? The altar language speaks. Okay. And it's kept in the idiom of old-fashioned man and woman go to the altar to get married. That's sort of a remembering back to a time when that was very much the use. Who relates to this as a table? You're having it both ways, Guido.
No.
No? Okay, just the table.
Just the table.
Thank you.
I know that this used to be an altar when this was a Catholic. This will be Catholic church.
Well, that's very interesting that you point that out. So an altar is a place for making sacrifice. And in the Old Testament, they were made from stones that had not been cut. So people would gather stones as they were made in creation, and they would be piled. And then on top of that altar, an offering would be made. It could be an animal. It could be produce from the garden. And in Israel last year, I got to see altars that were, well, what was left of them, that were 3,000 years old. It's a very long-standing arrangement. and many cultures to have a place where sacrifice is made on an altar. And you're right, Guido, in the Catholic tradition, that was an emphasis for a long time. In the 1960s, with Vatican II, they started to change the shape of their altars to look like a table. They might still call them altar, but we have an example right here. This is a 1980s example of an altar that's been made to look like a table. So I've explained to you what an altar is. A table, well, it's a flat area with legs. And every home has a table. So the Old Testament model for meeting God was an altar. You know, when something significant happened in the life of Abraham, in a special place, he built an altar. And there he worshipped. That was how people met God. Jesus was a table person. He sat at table with his friends, and he sat at the table which was prepared for Passover, a sacred meal. It's more a place of fellowship. And the model is that God is with those who gather at the table for that sacred meal. How did we get altars if Jesus was a table person? Well, some habits die hard. And the Old Testament models were so strong and resonated so strongly in the first few centuries that is where people went. So the communion took place at an altar. And the simple way to tell the difference between an altar and a table is if you can see underneath it, and if you can see the legs, we have a table. But if it's all closed in, whether it's with fabric or it's a solid block of stone, we have an altar. Why is this important? Well, I only have a few minutes. But seriously, this is a big fork in the road. Altar thinking led to an emphasis on sacrifice and the view that at Holy Communion, the sacrifice of Jesus was represented to God. And those who took part in the meal benefited from that. In my mind, it's as if biblical elements had been taken and rearranged to say something that actually Jesus wasn't intending. What Jesus instructed happened at a table. And his promise around this meal was he would be with those. And he would be remembered. He would be in some real way, which is another thing that people have argued about a lot in the last 500 years, he would be present, really present, when people met to do what he instructed them to do in his name. In the English Reformation, there was some argument about this. So the English Reformation, where the Anglican Church comes from, and it's reflected in the communion prayer that we're going to follow shortly. There is a line there about, we offer a sacrifice of praise and thanksgiving. So there were people there who really wanted to hold on to the faith that Jesus is presented as a sacrifice on our behalf. It's on page 11 if you're looking. The second, or the third paragraph, effectively. As we offer you this, our sacrifice of praise and thanksgiving. And, well, there was a little bit of compromise. So worship was still seen as a sacrifice, but it wasn't a sacrifice representing Christ to the Father as satisfaction for the sins and the failings of people. It became a sacrifice of praise and thanksgiving. So I've just given you a little bit of historical background to that. It's a move in the direction of table, away from altar. In the first few years of the English Reformation, men with hammers went around dismantling altars. And the instructions from the bishop in those days, and those who are church wardens understand how this works, you get letters, were that two sturdy men should pick up a table and take it into the heart of the congregation. So they were even at that point saying, we don't want a table up there because that is just for the priest. We want a table actually amidst the people. And it's taken a long time, but generally speaking, the global church, Catholic and various brands of Protestant, has moved in that direction. The way the Catholics moved on it is seen in this building in the 1980s. The table is still halfway up a mountain where only the priest goes. I feel a bit like Moses when I go up there sometimes. But at least the building is made to surround it a bit more. If you go in the old cathedrals, it's several, 40, 50 meters there, and you need binoculars to see what's going on. Or in the Eastern Orthodox tradition, they'll build a wall, iconostasis they call it, to hide what is going on there from everybody. That's probably enough for today. We've talked about altar, table. How altar thinking emphasizes sacrifice. Sacrifice is a totally valid biblical word. But how is it understood? I'm of the persuasion that Jesus set a table for his friends and provided a way for people to remember him in faith, remember him in such a way that in the mystery of the Holy Spirit, he is present. And I'd like to think that is the spiritual edification and the blessing that you receive through obeying Jesus' commands and entering into table fellowship with the Lord. One little way that I'd like to honor you for being here is that being here this afternoon is inconvenient. This is a sacrifice. This is part of your sacrifice of praise and worship. Breaking up your weekend to come to this service. Worship that involves sacrifice is precious. Worship that does not involve sacrifice or is not at cost is not worth that much. So, I hope I have given you something helpful. If I have dismantled things that you firmly believed in, please write to me. But understand that these are diversities within the Christian church.